Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and my mission every week is to bring you the most interesting entrepreneurs, business people, authors, speakers, anybody, people that I can find who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, their tips, and their actionable advice with us each week. And today I get to welcome to the show Michelle Tillis Lederman, who is also known for her energetic, engaging, I'm going to need coffee, and authentic presentations. An expert on workplace communications and relationships, Michelle's mission is to help people communicate and lead with confidence, clarity, and connection. She is an accomplished speaker, trainer, coach, and author of two books, including The 11 Laws of Likeability. I have to say, I love that title. And Heroes Get Hired. And I want to ask her about both books. I've been looking at both of them. The Heroes Get Hired actually brought a tear to my eye. She recently partnered with Rutgers Executive and Professional Education on the launch of The 11 Laws of Likeability, a live and online business impact accelerator program. Now, after a decade in finance, she was frustrated by the lack of effective communication and support within organizations, especially as she became a people manager. So she founded Executive Essentials, which is a training company that provides communications and leadership programs as well as executive coaching services, which enables others to succeed professionally where she struggled. A former NYU professor, financial executive, and recovering CPA, Michelle teaches from experience and shares what she learned during her extensive career. Her clients range from academia to nonprofit to Fortune 500, and some of those companies include Madison Square Garden, Citi, J&J, Deutsche Bank, GE, Columbia Business School, Target, Sony, and the Museum of Modern Art. Michelle has also appeared on NBC, CBS, Fox, and hundreds of radio shows across the country, including Gayle King, NPR, and Martha Stewart Living. She's been featured in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Star Ledger, Working Mother, Real Simple, U.S. News and World Report, on MSNBC, and Monster.com, among others. And she's here today. I am so flattered. Michelle, good morning, and welcome to Your Partner.
Good morning. I'm
excited
to be here.
Well, I love following you around on the internet. You have so much to share. I'm one of those people lurking going, wow, that's interesting. So before we get started.
Good. That's the reaction I want.
Yeah. So before we get started, tell our audience anything that I might have missed. Maybe something a little bit more personal about how you kind of got to be where you are today, because that's an impressive roster.
Sure. Well, I always say I'm a recovering CPA. I did start my career in finance, and I still recover because I have a bookkeeper and an accountant, and I audit them. So I haven't been able to leave that totally behind. I'm an animal lover. I have a rescue dog, and I used to do a lot of rescue work. And if people want to see some pictures of me with some exotic animals, they can go to my professional Facebook page and click on the album called Me and the Animals. And they'll see me with a Siberian tiger and a fox and a wolf and a pig and a lioness and lots of animals that I got access to. And I'm an adrenaline junkie. I have jumped out of a plane and swam with sharks and gone whitewater rafting. And except for riding a bike, which I'm terrified of, I will do just about anything.
You sound like a fun gal. You do. And I love that you know, you love animals, you have rescues. If you look at my Facebook page, you're never going to see pictures of me because I'm incredibly camera-phobic. I mean, incredibly camera-phobic. But you'll see pictures of my office assistants, you know, cats, and I have a rescue pit bull and she's the most precious thing you'll ever meet. She doesn't know that she's a pit bull. Doesn't have a clue.
You know, Pitbull, I'm an animal lover, and I have feel like pit bulls get a really bad rap because they're smart dogs with a muscle in their jaw.
Right. Well, she's part pit and Catahoula leopard cur, but she is the sweetest thing imaginable. And she was actually an hour away from being euthanized, if you can imagine. So we snatched her out of the jaws of death. But anyway, I mean, I love that when I meet up with fellow animal lovers, I'm always happy. So I'm happy. And if we're very quiet for a moment, you'll hear her snoring. She's in her bed to the right of my desk, and she's just snoring up a storm. So anyway,
I cannot hear a dog bark during this call. I said, I can't promise you'll not hear a dog barking during this.
It happens. It really does. Okay, so let's talk about, I want to talk about your book, but one of the books that you, I mean, both of them look like they're extremely good books, and I actually just downloaded one of them on Amazon, Heroes Get Hired. That one had me going, oh. Do you mind sharing a bit about that book before we get started?
Sure. This was my gift to those who have served. I always say this is my way of serving those who have served. There are a million veterans reintegrating into the civilian workplace over the next 5 years. And we need to absorb them into this workforce. But it's a different workforce. It's a shift in thinking. It's a shift in expected protocols and behaviors. And so this book is really to help the veteran understand what to do before, during, and after the interview to land the job. I really don't focus on the onboarding side, but maybe that's a future book. But it's really to help understand the different mentality. And I actually feel like I should be writing a book for the interviewer, because one of the things I realized in talking to a lot of veterans and understanding the challenges that they were having in the process is that interviewers are not asking the right questions to be able to understand how the organization would be served by their employment. And they're asking a third of the time, and this floors me, a third of the time veterans are being asked, have you shot anyone?
You're
and
kidding me.
No, I'm not.
My.
And it makes me sad. And I don't, I'm somebody who believes in assuming positive intent. And maybe they're just reflecting curiosity and not understanding the impact of the question. But it's inappropriate.
That was going to be my question. Is it just pure curiosity? Because I can't think of in very few instances, a valid reason to ask that question.
There is not a valid reason to ask the question. It's not an appropriate question for a work interview because it's not work-related. However, what I tell the veterans is you might decide you don't want to work for a company that asks that kind of question, and that's perfectly fine, but I want that to be your choice. I want you to still get the job and be able to manage these questions that are inappropriate with grace. And so I taught a technique called extract and redirect. And, you know, it's terminology that a service person might relate to. And what I mean by that is I want you to extract yourself from the question, not answer the question. And so you might say, if they ask you, have you shot anyone, you might say, you know what, there's a lot of misperceptions about how many people actually face combat. It's really only about 10%. I can tell you about my experience in the service, blah, 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 right? And then lead it back to something. So the extraction is to say something related to the question without answering the question. And then the redirection is to then change the conversation to something that's related to the job that you want to share with them about your experience.
You know,
and
I think
that holds
true for a lot of conversations. I don't know about you, but personal questions bug me straight out the door. I don't answer them. I've never answered them. I'm not going to answer them.
Well, so I might try to change your mind a little bit on that one, because I do believe in sharing of yourself as the way that we form connections, and that relates to my other book. But in an interview, it's a different situation.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, we can share a little bit of ourselves and show personality, because you need to understand if this person's going to fit. But we need to have these things be work-related and connected to the job. And so that book is really, it was a labor of love. It was sponsored by Citibank. It is produced by NBC. We have 20 videos, all available for free for veterans and their spouses. I have some bonus sections in there for the military spouse as well. And if they go to heroesgethired.com, they can download it. They can watch the videos. There's some exercises and activities that they can download as well. And that's all to help with that transition.
Now, and I love that. I mean, when I looked at the book excerpt, I went, oh my gosh. How did you get started down this path? And I'm glad you did.
So,
I mean, it sounds like a critical resource for people, but where did it come from?
I'm going to tell you the honest story. My first book, The 11 Laws of Likeability, is really how I live my life. I believe in connection and relationship, which is why I said I might try to lure you out of your shell a little bit to share, because as you just did, you shared something personal. You love animals.
I love animals.
And that's...
Yeah.
Yes, but that's a personal fact about you that you were willing to share with me that created a stronger connection between us because we share that love and passion. And so that's the basis of the first book. Every success I believe I've had is due to a relationship, and The Heroes Get Hired is no different. My sister was having dinner at a restaurant and ran into somebody that she went to grammar school with that she dated around fifth grade. And he happened to be the head of digital publishing for NBC. And she found out what he did, and she said, my sister just wrote a book, and he said, get her in my office. And so on December 6th of 2011, just a couple months after my first book came out, I was sitting in his office at NBC. And I brought him pictures of him in for fifth grade with my sister, with his sweatpants pulled all the way up and his shirt tucked in. It was fantastic.
Did he pay
and
you to destroy those pictures?
I'm a grade younger than my sister, so I remember him from grammar school. He remembered me, and we chatted. And he said, I want to do this with your book, and I want to do that with your book. And I said, well, I would love to, but my publisher owns all those rights, and we'd have to see with them what is allowed. I said, why don't I just write you another book? And the words were out of my mouth before I knew what I was saying. And I'm thinking, my husband's going to kill me. So Michael says, well, what could you write me a book on? I said, well, I could write you a book on interviewing tomorrow. I said, that's all in my head. You know, I said, we can do a whole series. We can do for the returning parent. We could do for the new grad. We could do for the veteran. We could do for the unemployed. And he goes, the veteran. Let's start with the veteran.
Wow.
And that's really how it started. And let me tell you, that the process of my first book was about 3 years from conception to shelf. This book, because of the relationship, December 6th was that first meeting where I just threw the idea out there. It was on the shelves. So that was December 6th of 2011. It was on the shelves by February 13th of 2013. You're talking like less than 14 months.
That's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
And you didn't have to even write out an outline or go through all of the other processes, did you? It was just one of those serendipity things where the idea just bloomed right there as you spoke of it.
Yeah, I didn't have to do a proposal.
Nice.
We didn't have to do any of it. And I basically, as I talked about it, and he's like, the veteran, well, NBC's really into helping veterans. And I said, well, yeah, and we just started diving in. We had all this passion and energy around the veterans, and so we just went for it.
Well, I have to tell you, I am going to be posting all of those links all over my social media and wherever I can, because yeah, I'm a huge proponent for our military. I always have been. You know, I support Wounded Warriors. It's one of the few charities that I support every year with as much as I can. And, I mean, I will share this information as much as I can wherever I can.
Well, thank you. Tag me, and I'll make sure to retweet you.
Will do. Will absolutely do. So your second book, so which was the first book and which was the second book? I got myself a little behind there.
The first book was The 11 Laws of Likeability, and the second book was Heroes Get Hired.
Okay. Well, what I downloaded was, or what I bought yesterday, was The 11 Laws of Likeability. Let's talk about that one, because, everything that we do these days is networking, whether it's online, whether it's in a resume, whether it's just talking with the person in line with you next at the grocery store. We're always networking in one way or another, whether we recognize it or not. And I know that you do things a little bit differently when you're networking, because a lot of network experts, you know, they're focusing on getting in a room and then selling their book at the back of the room. To me, that seems, and you're welcome to correct me on this, that seems like it should be part of a process, but not the only process.
Oh, no, I agree with everything that has come out of your mouth.
Okay.
I always say
we're
going
to get along just fine.
I always say that you are always networking. And just as you said, it could be with the bus driver, it could be with the mom on the playground, it could be with somebody at your religious affiliation. You're always networking, because all networking really is making friends. And if we start thinking of it that way, we stop thinking about it in that strategic, icky, manipulative, yucky kind of used car salesman kind of way. And I apologize to used car salesmen. I'm using that reference because we relate to it.
They've earned it. You know, a lot of them.
My family's a bunch of real estate agents, and they've started to earn that one too, so I'll pick on them as well. But the idea is that if we shift our thinking from the work, business, strategic, I have a goal, to let's just talk about anything, about animals, about our charities, about wounded warriors, and now I care for somebody. I am interested in them. I have a connection, and that's what we're looking for, is the connection. And we want to shift three ways, right? One is from the work to the anything. One is from the short term to the long term. A lot of times when you see people networking and they're going out there, there's a purpose. I need to get this many cards. I need to get a job. I need to raise money. I need to this. I need to that. And that's the third way that we shift, right? It's not about you. So if we take a long-term perspective and we don't network for now, right, and for that need, then we build that network for the long term. And if we take it out of ourselves, it's not about you, it's also not about them. And that's where people get a little stuck as well. When we are networking, when we're building relationships, we don't want it to be all about us, and we don't want it to be all about them. We want it to be about the relationship, just as we did. I mean, we're a great example of this. I connected to you because I saw you on social media and I was looking for a virtual assistant. We chatted, and that wasn't where we ended up, but because we explored the conversation more broadly, we're now on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And if we didn't seek to think about it long term, if we didn't seek to learn more about each other, then this would not have happened. And it would have been, you do not fit this need, and we are done, and now you're not in my life anymore. But you are, and it's great.
Right. Right. And one of the very first things that we had during that initial conversation was, I mean, I don't think we were three sentences in. I was like, I would love to interview you. And we just went straight into that. So, you just never know.
Oh, my God, you're, like, quoting me. I love it. The book is in, like, three sections, and the first section is the before the conversation, and the middle section is the conversation, and the third section is what you do after the conversation. And in that middle middle section, my mantra is always have the conversation. A lot of times we talk ourselves out of the conversation before we even have it. And I got an email recently. It was a cold email that somebody sent asking me about a conference. And they were very straightforward. They told me about the price right in the email, which was maybe 10% of what I typically charge for that type of service. And instead of being like, well, no, they can't afford me, I'm not even going to speak to them, I said, well, I'm happy to chat with you. Let's get on the phone. So we got on the phone.
I do the same thing. You know, and I will, in fact, I have a conversation today with a lady who's already convinced that she cannot afford me. And the truth is, she probably can't. But that doesn't mean that I don't want to explore with her what she can do on her own and where she can maybe bring in assistance at a much lower rate than I offer. And I'm perfectly willing to have that conversation with her. She needs the help. Why wouldn't I help her?
Exactly. And I always say, you know, I got on a call with somebody recently, and this is going to sound a little odd, but I talked her out of hiring a coach. I said, please let me get that work. I'm like, let me give you, and usually I give a half hour, but in this case, I think I was in the car and driving, so she ended up getting an hour of my time. And I said, look, I've given you many things to do before you have to spend any money, and a lot of ways to do even more beyond that without spending any money. And it isn't about, can I get a client? Can I get a paycheck? It's about, what do you need and how can I help you? And I often talk up people out of spending the money on a coach, and I believe in coaching. Obviously, I do it. I believe in it. It makes a difference. But I don't think you have to jump straight into a fortune.
No, no. And look, I've done the same thing as you. I mean, I have talked people out of hiring me more times than I like to admit. But there are times when they are just simply not where they need to be. They would be throwing money away, and I would know they were throwing money away. and I can't function like that. But you know what?
And then it does.
All of them are now really good friends. I mean, they follow
mm-hmm.
me, they chat, they come on the radio show, they listen in, they refer me like crazy to other people. It, you know, and I didn't plan it that way, but here's the deal. If I really think you're not ready to work with me, I'll be the first one to tell you. And like you just said, I'll give you action steps. You need to do this. You need to build up your social media platform. You know, here, I'll send you some cheat sheets. Get in this on your own, because you shouldn't be hiring somebody to do the work that you want them to do if you don't know what you're directing them to do. You've got to get your feet wet. So I've had all these conversations, and never once did I have regret about it.
Absolutely. And it doesn't feel good for us if it's,
no.
if it's not a beneficial relationship. So I got on the phone with this woman who wanted me to fly to Dallas. And as I said, I've got two young kids. I try not to leave them overnight. And at those fees, it wasn't really a fit. But I said, well, tell me about your audience. I said, oh, I love working with that audience. And I said, well, do you do any webinars? And she goes, well, we actually do. I said, well, maybe that's a way that I can serve your audience and not have to travel. And I would do it at those fees because I don't have to leave my family. And so now we have another solution to the problem. So we think more broadly, and we get in the conversation, we ask questions, and we show some curiosity. And now, hey, great, I get to serve her audience and I don't have to leave Jersey.
Right. And, you know, sometimes it's just having that conversation that uncovers so many other things that weren't actually going to be the topic at all, but actually
exactly.
served both of you better. It's amazing how that happens. Yeah.
I can't even count how times that's happened to me. And I relay a lot of these stories in the book where I'll be walking, meeting somebody who I think, somebody asked me for help as they're starting a business, and I think, okay, I'm going to be coaching somebody. And then all of a sudden, an hour later, and I remember this girl, she's in the book. Her real name is Stephanie. I don't know what I called her in the book because I changed all the names. I was like, oh, my God, that's what you do? I need to hire you. And I ended up hiring her. Yet our intention was that I was going to just kind of give her some advice as a friend.
Right. And oftentimes, you know, in the businesses that we're in, you'll find that you're getting on the phone to have a conversation with somebody about something entirely unrelated, and all of a sudden you're doing a webinar with them, or you're doing a quick product, or, you know, all of a sudden you're part of their product launch. So be open, and be open to listen to just about everything. But if it's not going to be a good fit, you know, our spidey sense tells us that, doesn't it? I listen to my spidey sense a lot. I do.
It's interesting. My dad calls it his neck. You call it your spidey sense. And for me, I'll attribute this to my mother. I say I trust until somebody gives me a reason not to.
Exactly.
And so I go out there with assuming positive intent and, you know, and I give and I'm open. And if somebody gives me a reason not to, I still fight against it because I want the answer to be what I want the answer to be. And we like to prove ourselves right. And so we look for evidence to support what we want to think. And so if we're going out there and we're assuming the worst, we are going to prove ourselves right.
That is very profound. Thank you for sharing that. Okay, so listen, for networking, I mean, we all come across those skeevy marketers. I mean, I'm not going to call them anything other than that. They're just skeevy. And they are just in your face, and they're showing their pictures of their Ferrari in front of somebody else's home. I don't know where the car came from. And you look at that and go, oh. I mean, I instantly see fake tan and gold chains. That's just how my mind works. And once, not good. And the minute I get that mental image in my head, I'm not going to trust them. And they're out there. Now, admittedly, in recent years, they've kind of slowed down on that. Oh, you know, you're going to make $100,000 a day if you take my program. That has slowed down. But what is happening that I have noticed, and you know, what you're really kind of reiterating for me is that people want to know you, they want to like you, and above all, they want to trust you. And that takes time, doesn't it? I mean, you have to really be out there as a resource. You have to be kind and patient with people. You need to really kind of put yourself out there and help people. You can't just open your doors and expect to make $1 million bucks that year. Or am I wrong?
What I say, Well, I don't know if people make $1 million a year. But
I know one or two. Not me.
But what you're really talking about to me is the foundation of the book. So there's 11 laws in the book, and there's two that I feel are the most critical. And for me, what I'm hearing is law number one, which is the law of authenticity. And the real you is the
there
best
it is,
you.
Yeah. Right.
And
right.
I get that I have, and I'm putting some air quotes around this, I have some unique charms. I am who I am. I can be loud. I can be, you know, a little boisterous. I can be a large personality. I can interrupt people, which I've clearly been doing on this call. We have a little delay, so I apologize for that. But I
Not
can be all,
all
those things. And
you know, it's so
is,
funny when you said that. I have to interrupt you for a second. When you said that unique charms, honey child, that is so Southern. So welcome to my neck of the woods.
Well, I love it. I don't know where I got it from, but I used to say it about my son, who one of my sons is an early intervention child and had some special needs and had what we call his unique charms. Other people might call them quirky, and if people want to be mean, they could call it weird. But I prefer to think of it as unique charms, and we all have our unique gifts and our unique flaws. And the idea is not to just accept yourself. I believe in continuous improvement. I believe in stretching ourselves to be better ourselves, but not to change ourselves. I am never not going to be loud. I am never not going to be a little out there and have my hands gesturing all over the place and use my voice, and that's who I am. But can I tone it down when needed? Of course I can, and that's the point of understanding that when you're in the relationship, you need to work with what's comfortable for that other person, not just be who you are, but to moderate it, to enable somebody else to see what is likable about you. Because sometimes it's really hard to get past the outer images of either quiet or loud or this or that that sometimes off-puts others. So when I talk about authenticity, I want you to embrace who you are, but I want you also to consider that it is not always about you. You have to think about the interaction you're having with somebody else to make it feasible for them to see beyond that one maybe dominant aspect of how you present yourself.
Now, do you have any tips or action steps that people can take for that? One of the things that I get, it's not as much anymore, I have to say, because people are shifting away from, oh, I've got to copy everybody else and emulate everybody else and do what everybody else is doing, and now they're more comfortable in their own authentic skin. So that's a good thing. But I love that the authenticity, I love, in fact, I just wrote it down because that's exactly what we're talking about here. But are there any steps that people can take to just kind of get comfortable being themselves? I mean, if you're constantly and consistently brash, that may be off-putting to somebody, but you've got to market somewhere. So what can people do to go, seriously, they do. So what can people do, or, you know, are there steps in the book to say, okay, learn how to be comfortable, but learn how to listen to other people at the same time?
There's a whole chapter on this, but I'm going to give you a couple of quick ideas. First of all, we need to read somebody else's body. So when you are interacting with somebody, you want to follow their lead. There's a concept called mirroring that happens naturally when we're comfortable with somebody. I don't want you to necessarily force mirroring, but if somebody's talking at a little bit of a slower or less high volume, then maybe you want to just bring it down a little. I'm not saying match completely. I'm saying just rein it in a little. Or vice versa. If you've got somebody who's talking really fast, you don't want to come at them talking really slow because you're going to have a mismatch. And it's going to cause a friction of communication. So you want to try to start to match a little bit closer to what you're receiving. The other thing I would say is start with curiosity. There's a concept called advocacy versus inquiry. And inquiry is about understanding the motivations and desires of somebody else. And advocacy is sharing and seeking to be understood of what you want, right? So advocacy is about me. Inquiry is about you. I always say start with inquiry. You will have a much easier time advocating if you understand how they make decisions, how they think, what's important to them. So that's one concept to think about. The other is, and this is a little bit more detailed, and you can kind of take a deeper dive in the book, but when we are feeling inauthentic, we know it. We know it in our bodies. We are a little uncomfortable. There's all these mental messages jumbling around in our head. We are trying rather than just being. I don't want people to try. I want people to be. And so in those moments where we're feeling like we're trying, I want you to really take note of what are the mental messages going on. What is the concern? What is the fear? And then typically the behaviors that we have and the things that we have to put ourselves into, we might not like these big conferences or we might not like these one-on-one meetings. And so you can classify a lot of our actions into four categories. I want to, I get to, I have to, and I should. Now, obviously the want-tos and get-tos we can get energy around and we can bring our authentic selves because we have excitement and we have interest. The have-tos and the shoulds are a different category. I don't believe there is a single should that should happen.
Oh, explain that.
We either need, right? If I find myself saying I should, it is a complete alarm in my head going, it's a should in my head right now.
Mm-hmm.
Can I shift this to I get to or I want to? Is there some aspect of this that I can be excited about? And I do. I literally try to do this. And if I can't get there, then I don't do it.
See, I don't know about you, Michelle, but I'm pretty bloody minded. And anytime somebody tells me I need to do something, even my GPS, and she's got this gorgeous British voice, it's very pretty, and she says, turn left now, and I always say, you're not the boss of me. I have a real problem with that. I do. And I get lost a lot. So tell me those steps
Nobody
again,
else
because I'm writing them down.
Yeah, this is
it's
you telling
sad.
You this.
I know,
right?
And it's sad. And honestly, I come up, the person that I resist the most, and this is a very sad thing, and I recognize it, the person whose instructions I resist the most are mine.
Mm.
When I tell myself I must do something, I should do something, instantly my hands are on my hips. I'm going, oh, no, you don't.
You need to shift your language to yourself. And
no
this
kidding.
Is for all the listeners. Instead of saying you must and you should and you have to, say you get to do this because the result will be this. You want to do this because the result will be that. You're interested. And here's why. You need to change your own messaging because when you, and I'm the same way, you give me an ultimatum, I'm going to do exactly the other opposite thing because nobody's going to put me, nobody's going to put baby in a corner, you know?
That's right.
Right? I am like, I love that tough side of me, but I'm only fighting against myself. And the shoulds, I typically either, if I can't shift them, I eliminate them. And the have-tos, sometimes we have to do our have-tos. They are have-tos. We have to pay taxes. We have to attend certain events. We have to. I'm going to an event tonight with my husband that I might not be excited for. And I said to him, I said, well, who's going to be there? Because we went to this event last year. And already I'm thinking, what time can I come home? But that's not going to make it a successful event. And so he's like, well, there's somebody from this company that I really want to talk to. I said, okay, I'm excited that we're going to get to sit at a table with them. Let's make that happen. And so I focus on one little aspect of it to embrace, like, I'm looking forward to meeting these two people and sitting and talking with them and building a relationship with them. If I meet other people, great, that's gravy. But I'm really looking forward to these two people. And so that shifts me from dread to at least a little bit of looking forward. I can't say I'm jumping up for joy, but I feel like I can engage. Does that make sense?
Right. It does. You're not dragging yourself along anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I will definitely take those steps because this is when other people ask me to do something, I'm almost always willing or able to do it. Now, my mom learned many years ago not to tell me to do anything because that never did work out very well. But honestly, I have those conversations in my head, like, oh, I don't want, and I get whiny, and then I feel like a big old baby. It's really embarrassing. And look, I'm alone in my house. I live alone. I've got cats and a dog, and I'm looking around to see if they're witnessing me going, it's pitiful, because I know what I'm doing is just downright wrong. It's stupid. It doesn't move me forward. It doesn't make me feel well physically or mentally, but yet I keep doing it. So I've got some lessons to learn. Thank you for being here today. I'm so excited because if nothing else, if I take nothing away from this call, but this, and obviously I will take away a lot, this is what I know I really need to focus on, and I am really grateful for that.
Well, thank you. You actually just lived law number 10, which is the law of giving, which is my second most important, or actually I would say they're on equal footing. Authenticity and giving are the two critical components for me in the entire book. And you just gave me a gift, right? You told me that I am creating value for you. And for me, that's a gift.
And, you absolutely did.
But if you didn't tell me it and I wasn't sure, and I don't know, and I question, was that good? Am I helping? Is this valuable?
Mm-hmm.
But the fact bothered to, that's the gift. So let me share with your listeners, because for a lot of your listeners, we're in business, we're entrepreneurs, we're employees. This will help you in no matter what field you're in, this concept, and it's the law of giving. And the law basically says give because you can. Give because you want to. Give first. Give often, give without expectation, and that's a really hard part of it as well. And I once did a talk, and there's a woman right in the front, and very loudly as I was talking about this concept, she goes, I'm tired of giving. Where's mine? And she stopped me in my tracks, and I looked, right? And I thought, okay, I hear you. And I thought to myself, well, maybe you're giving to the wrong people. Nope, that's not it. Maybe you're giving, nope, that's not it. And I started to think about what's going on. I stopped for a moment. I said, well, what have you asked for? And she looked at me like I had 10 heads and 14 arms. And she's like, well, nothing. I said, well, you need to know.
She had
what...
no expectations.
No, she had expectations, but she didn't let anybody know what she needed or wanted.
Oh.
So she hadn't asked anybody for anything. And here's the thing. Many people want to give. Many people want to add value, but they don't know how. They don't know what. And we need to help. So there's two roles here. One is I want you to ask others how you might be able to help. I want you to seek and be creative and identify ways that you can help them. Right. For example, I just got off a call and I said, oh, I'm going to get you into this and I'm going to do this and I'm going to help you with this webinar. And I told her how I could help her. Okay. The flip side of that is I also asked her the question, what do you need right now? What are you working on? How can I help you? And you also need to know the answer to that question. Right. Because if people want to help you and you're like, oh, I don't know, but you do, or you haven't given any thought, then you're not going to get it. So if you're sitting there going, I'm tired of giving and how am I going to get, remember you do need to ask. And it's okay to ask. But when we give, it really creates results exponentially in the universe because it doesn't always come back to you, but
it's the law
of
reciprocity.
You know, that was actually the original title for this chapter.
Oh.
It was originally called the law of reciprocity, and I said, that's not what I mean. That's not what I want to promote. Reciprocity will occur, and that's why it works, but the reciprocity may not be direct. It might not be, I did for you,
right.
You did for me. For example, I met a...
And you never know, I mean, but it will show up. And here's the way I feel about the law of reciprocity. I don't look at it as a linear line. I just know that if I do something good for somebody, either something is going to come back to me down the road or they're going to pay it forward or I'm going to pay it forward. It just has a ripple effect, kind of like tossing a stone into the still waters of a lake. You see all those ever-widening mm-hmm. concentric circles. That, to me, is the law of reciprocity.
That is exactly it. And I was going to tell you a story about a woman who I talk about in my book. Her name is Amy. And I met her at a conference, and she was a speaker, and this was about a decade ago. And I hadn't yet started my business. And she had been doing something that was similar and it was inspiring. And I saddled up to her at lunch and chatted her up. And I was like, oh, my God, she's amazing. Can I take you out to lunch? Right. Another way of giving is a cup of coffee or lunch. You gave me appreciation or recognition or thanks. So I take her out to lunch, 2 hours. I pick her brain. I attribute something she said to me as to the courage to start my own business. And I wanted to give back to her so badly. Of course, that's the idea of reciprocity. You want to give back. But there was nothing I had at that time. And we would be in touch every year, a call, an email, maybe a coffee every couple of years. And I still had nothing to give. But what I did instead was every entrepreneur that wanted to start their own business that asked me to sit with them, I sat with them. And I hit over 100.
Right.
And it was all due to her. And so 5 years after that first meeting, I ran into her at when I moved to New Jersey, I ran into her at a gym, at a cafe. And I said, I just wrote about you. And she's like, what are you talking about? And I said, well, it's because of you that I've sat with over 100 entrepreneurs. And, you know, she was moved. I mean, you could see it. Like, she caught her breath, and she kind of looked sideways at me. She was like, wow, you know? And so just as you had given me appreciation, that thank you was a gift, right? That's an easy gift that we can give a lot more, right? Say thank you to somebody. And not in that instant, like for something that was that had an impact. So we caught up, and she was working on some things, and finally it was my turn to be able to help her. And I was able to help her in a huge way, but it took me a long time. And so as we think about that idea of giving, there is the idea of patience in hand with it. Patience in the results that may come back to you. Patience in your ability to help. Patience in allowing that relationship to grow, as you said earlier. But if we come with that philosophy of giving up, desiring help, of letting us know we're looking for it, that sometimes is enough for now.
That is a really lovely story. And I think anybody listening right now can resonate to that, because we've all had it happen. We've all had those moments where we, you know, did something or somebody did something for us that we didn't know in the moment it was going to fundamentally change how we look at certain parts of our personality or parts of our business. But you're always looking to give back. Again, maybe not directly to that person. It's great if you can. It's best if you can. But if you can just move it forward and just take that new knowledge and that new energy and share it, I think that's what really being human is.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I think people have really good intentions. And I'll share a story about my husband who, you know, I'm an extrovert, he's an introvert, right? So I have a little bit more of the outgoing personality, and he has a little bit more of a quiet nature. And about a year and a half ago, he was in the job search. And he was networking, and he was getting out there. He was doing a great job, and people were really helping. I connected with people. People were stepping up. They were introducing him. They were connecting. He was getting a lot of value. And I said, well, what have you done to help your network? And he said, well, nothing yet. Nobody's asked me for anything, but as soon as they do, I want to do it.
Right.
And that's where a lot of people are. And that's why it comes full circle back to the story where the woman said, where's mine? And I said to my husband, I said, well, why make them ask? I mean, yes, I want people to know that they should ask. But, hey, if you have ideas of how you can help, offer. Take that first step. It's hard to ask. Even if they don't want or need that particular thing, you're showing them that you're thinking in that way, and they might then feel more comfortable making that ask.
Right. And, Michelle, isn't it difficult for a lot of people to actually ask for help? I mean, I don't know about you. It's difficult for me. I have to really kind of work up my courage to do it, and that's not even the right word. It's just I'm fairly uncomfortable asking other people to help me. I always have been.
I get it. Asking is not easy. The first thing I'm going to say is that you must. If you don't ask, the answer is no. If you do ask, you immediately increase your odds. So just play the percentages and the probabilities, make the ask. And I'm also going to give you some ways to make that process a little bit easier for you, okay? But you can always just blame Michelle. Say, Michelle told me to ask. Michelle said, I will take the blame because I'm telling you, you have to ask. Now, you have to think about when and who and how. A quick story. I was at NYU many years ago doing some interview coaching, and I met some other coaches there, and it was lovely. I was meeting people. Within 5 minutes of meeting one woman, she asked me for something very boldly and very directly, but I had just met her. And I was a little taken aback, and I thought to myself, all right, okay, this is still my mentality of wanting to give. And I said, well, why don't we do this? She had asked me to connect her to somebody else. But I didn't know her. I said, well, why don't we get to know each other first? and then I can figure out how I might be able to help you. And she said, that's great. So,
right.
Again, I was still a little taken aback by it, but I stayed open and I got to know her. And at the end of the conversation, I said, well, look, I can't speak to your work and I can't recommend your services, but here's what I can do. And what I can do is let this person know that you want to reconnect with them, put you guys back in touch, let them know why, let them know how you knew each other before. I said, that's, you know, I'm comfortable doing that. Would that work for you? And she goes, that would be wonderful. And so that's exactly what I did.
Right. And that is a very thoughtful process to work through. I mean, two things could have happened. You could have said, no, I don't know you. Why would I do such a thing? Or you could have just blithely gone ahead and said, sure, I'll do that, and then have the other person mad at you if they didn't want to connect. So you picked the middle mm-hmm. ground, which was the wise move, which is a very thoughtful move. A lot of people don't do that. They either bounce off of one or the other. And I mean, it's truly, you have to be cautious how you're dealing with people. Not everybody wants to be connected to everybody and their grandmother.
Okay, so now we've got a couple things I need to hit. So first, I did not rush to judgment, and that's something that's hard to do because
yeah,
we all do
exactly.
judge, and that's natural, and that's instinctual, and we should, but we need to stay open to the fact that our judgments may be wrong. Okay, so that's one thing. Now, this person who I made that connection to, she ended up reconnecting, getting work, attributed it all to me, felt very appreciative, and I was like, great, I didn't feel like I did that much, but great, I'm glad it worked out. We've been in touch, I mean, this is going back over a decade. We've stayed in each other's circle. I put a list out. I have a group on LinkedIn, a small little group of people who are in my industry, and I put a note out saying, I need something on a listening activity. Does anybody have anything? She was the first one to respond, called me up, brought me a stack of materials, not just emailed them to me. She physically came to where I was in the city that same day and brought me them and sat down with me for a half hour to show me what she had.
Oh,
right.
Nice.
So, and it was years later. So by being willing to put yourself out there a little bit for somebody in a respectful and an honest way, I honestly couldn't say, hey, I know somebody and she's great, because I didn't know that. But I could say, hey, I met somebody, and she used to work with you, and she'd like to reconnect, and can I put you back in touch? And you made a really good point that I also wanted to hit, is when we make connections, which is one of the best ways to give, right, as we talk about this idea of giving a connection is extremely valuable. And you have to be careful with it. When you make a connection for somebody, you need to understand what the benefit is to each party and share what that benefit is. And if there is a one-sided benefit, then you do need to ask permission as to if that person wants the connection.
Absolutely.
I always tell the story about meeting a CEO of a company that I referenced in a conversation. I had said the name of the company in my business. She goes, well, do you want to meet that CEO? And I was like, yes, I do. And she goes, well, let me ask him. And that was the smartest thing she ever did. And let me tell you, that CEO and I are having lunch on December 15th. And we have been in touch for 10 years. I've been to his New Year's party at his house because she made a very respectful connection. And it was
right.
definitely my advantage than it was to his. But those people who feel like they have nothing to offer, I'm talking to a multimillionaire CEO, visionary, IPO'd three companies, and then there's little old me. 10 years ago, I didn't have a book out. I was starting my business. It was, you know. And I went to his office on our second meeting, and I asked him some questions. And at the end of the conversation, actually, it was not even the end, it was the middle, he's like, oh, you've given me a lot to think about, Michelle. And I thought, really? Oh, my God. You know, apparently I created value by just asking some questions. And then I left the office, and I called my husband, and I said, he's doing this, and it's technology-based, and he's looking for something, and do you have any ideas? And my husband, and I'll never forget this, his answer was the word Moogle. I don't know what Moogle is to this day. It was the word MOOC. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it still exists, but I know that that was the answer. And so I said, great, can you email us your ideas? And he did. And 15 minutes later, I emailed them to the CEO, and he emails back within 5 minutes and says, this is great. Thanks so much. He could have found that out himself. And the fact that I put that effort in, the fact that I got that information for him showed that I wanted to add value, that I was thinking, that I was listening. And that's what we're trying to do. And when I needed to make an ask, I can make an ask. And I promise to tell your listeners, and I know we're getting close to the end of our time, but I promise to tell your listeners how to make an effective ask. So here we go. There are different types of asks that I want you to know about. My favorite, and the one I probably use the most often, is called the opt-out ask. And that's where we make it as easy for somebody to say no as it is to say yes. Because yes is very easy to say, and no is very hard. And if I have to say no to you, I want to avoid you because I feel bad. And that affects the long-term relationship. So if I give them the reason to say no, I'll say, hey, if New Jersey isn't too far to travel, or hey, if you're not too busy, or hey, if your company allows it. So I give them the excuse to say, oh, my company doesn't allow it. Oh, it is too far to travel.
Right.
And it's okay then, and everybody's comfortable. So that's the opt-out.
And that's just it. They're comfortable enough to go ahead and say, okay, well, she's given me that out, so now I'm willing to listen to the rest of it.
Exactly. So the opt-out ask I probably use all the time. There's the alternative ask. If you can't come, perhaps there's somebody else who you'd want to send. So if not you, someone else. If you can't meet with me, is there someone else in the organization that I might talk to? It's the alternative. If not you, then. If not lunch, have a breakfast. It's giving them options, right? So that's the alternative ask. And then there's the shrinking ask. And the shrinking ask is, instead of just giving them options, it's making that second option smaller. Oh, well, if you can't meet live, how about a quick call? Or if we can't do lunch, can I just buy you a cup of coffee? You want to make it a smaller, easier yes. So they have different things that they might be able to say yes to.
Right.
So those are three ways that you might make your requests that are a little bit more comfortable, a little less, you know, feeling pushy for you, and still make rules for somebody else.
You know, it's an odd thing. I do something similar on the phone, and I didn't realize I was doing it. You know, when I make a personal phone call or even a business phone call that may not be expected, because normally I'm scheduled to within an inch of my life, but on the off chance that I have to make a call to a client or, you know, friends or my mother or somebody, the very first thing I'll say after I say hello is, do you have a moment? Are you busy? Because they may not be. And I give them the opportunity to say, Denise, I can't really chat right now. Can we set up another time? To me, it's just the courteous thing to do instead of launching in to whatever you've got on your mind without making sure that they really have the time to deal with you.
That's one of the things I do as well. As soon as I get on the phone, and even if we had it scheduled, I'll say, is this still a good time?
Right, right. Time is so important to all of us, and I think many people just don't understand just that one simple acknowledgement of your, you know, the other person's time is so powerful. It's so important. Because I know I've had people, and I'll pick up the phone thinking, okay, I'm going to have to tell them I can't really talk right now. 5 minutes later, I haven't had an opportunity to stem the tide. So I learned that a long time ago. Is this a good time? Should I call back? You know, that type of thing. It's just, to me, it's just courteous.
Mm-hmm. I am with you.
Okay, I've got a very quick, and you're right, man, I need to have you come back. And we didn't get anywhere near where I wanted to get with this. Would you come back again in the new year?
You got it.
Good. Good, good, good. But I want you to explain, in one of the chapters, I believe, in your book, is the law of energy. And I'm fascinated by that. Do you have a moment to kind of go through that or at least start the conversation?
I can try to start the conversation. The law of energy was actually the first chapter I wrote in the entire book.
Right.
And it was because nobody could understand it. And the law itself is that energy is contagious. And I think we know that.
Mm-hmm.
I think we know that when we're around somebody who's happy, it starts to rub off. When we're around somebody who's sad, it starts to rub off. If somebody starts to giggle, we don't even know why we're laughing, but we start to laugh too.
I love that.
So that's the idea behind it. I'm trying to figure out. I know we're getting close to the end, but the idea.
Well, we
of understanding,
can come back to that in the next show if you'd rather. If you think it's a longer conversation,
I think we'll take a deeper dive. But I'll give them some things to think about.
Good.
And what we can think about is where our energy is as we approach a situation, what we think our energy knowledge is of the other person, what we expect their energy to be. So there's energy expectations and there's energy knowledge.
and there's energy awareness. So those are the three components. Energy awareness for me, energy expectations of them, and energy knowledge that we have of each other. And what happens is some of those things start to work against each other. For example, I am somebody who, I think you can tell from my voice, tends to be bubbly, energetic, happy most of the time. But, you know, we all have our days where I'm just like, I'm tired. I just don't have it in me today. You know? And I remember back in school all the time, if I was having one of those days, I couldn't count how many people would come up to me and say, "What's the matter? Are you okay? What's wrong with you?"
Yep.
And it would actually be really frustrating for me because they had this expectation of a certain energy that I needed to bring, and I didn't want to bring it that day. And so sometimes those energy expectations can work against us.
Especially if you're an introvert, and
I know, somewhere in March or something like that, back on, and we will take a deeper dive into it.
Yeah, I would love that, because and what you said just really resonated with me, because you're married to an introvert, and I'm a total introvert. I mean, I'll tell anybody who will listen, I'm about a half inch away from being a hermit. But seriously, and I love people, I do. I just need a lot of alone time, because I'm cerebral, I'm always in my head. But what you just said about energy is so important, because when I get around too many people for too long a period of time, I'm drained. I mean, I am drained to the point where it's almost all I can do to lean against a wall. And honestly, that's tough. It's tough for people like me.
Well, no, I'm so impressed, though, because you are on an exhausting conversation. We've been going for an hour, and you're going.
Oh, yeah, but I'm thoroughly enjoying your company.
Likewise. But you know, I get that the energy, that's what happens. And, you know, kind of wrapping up that energy piece of this is introverts get their energy with that alone time by being able to reduce themselves. Extroverts get their energy off of other people. It's almost like we suck the energy out of everybody around us.
Kind of, sort of.
At the end of yeah, we do. And I do. When I'm alone, sometimes my energy just drops. But when I do a day of training, I'll be on my feet for 8-9 hours, never sitting down, never getting a break, because they follow me to the bathroom and they follow me to lunch, and I literally am on the entire time. And at the end of the day, I am happy and I'm feeling great. I'm physically wiped, and when I stop and I sit down, I can feel it. But that entire time I don't, because I'm just feeding off of the energy. And it's really very fascinating to see how energy needs to be rejuvenated.
Right.
And how energy needs to be.
And it's important to understand how you expand and accept energy. And I think a lot of people are finally coming around to understanding that introverts we're not odd. We're not shy. I'm not shy at all. I just need a lot of alone time. And, it took me years to finally just say, you know, this is who I am, and this is the way I'm going to live my life.
Mm-hmm. And here's what I say to anybody, because we said at the beginning of this call, you said that you don't share anything and you've got really hard and fast lines. Now, I believe in
apparently.
I believe in kind of accepting who we are and living by our own codes. And I also believe in stretching ourselves a little bit out of our comfort zone. Right? As you did, even though you think you weren't sharing anything personal, you did. You shared charities that are important to you. You shared your living situation. You shared your love of animals. You do share. And so sometimes it's understanding, softening those lines a little bit, staying open to possibility, and stretching ourselves just a little outside our comfort zone keeps us growing. And it doesn't change who we are, and it doesn't change our boundaries, but it just gives us a little wiggle room.
And I'm glad you said it like that, because my boundaries are pretty firm. In fact, I police them regularly, and I've been known to say, look, you poke your nose over my fence, I'll bloody it. That's just all there is to it. But you're right, and I do like stretching, but I don't like being crowded, if that makes any sense. So, you know, being an introvert can be tricky. But that doesn't mean I don't live a very full life, and I get to meet people like you, and I get to meet all kinds of people, you know, via the internet, which honestly, I am convinced that God created for me. It is mine, all mine. I just share it with y'all. and I'm happy to do so, but it's mine. And honestly, the way things have opened up anymore, where we can reach out and chat with people that in the normal day we wouldn't to meet. We just wouldn't. We wouldn't have an opportunity. You're in New Jersey, I'm in Louisiana. We're unlikely to meet up in the Walmart parking lot, but here we are, and we're having this great conversation. And I'm really appreciative of that. Yeah. Well, listen, we're not streaming live any longer, but we're still recording, and I want you to tell people where they can find you on the Internet and where they can find your books.
Okay, MichelleTillisLetterman.com. I will spell that MichelleTillis. LEDERMAN, I lost track of what I was spelling, .com is my website. From there, you can find links to, oh, is that your show? I have your show up on my screen. I think your show just ended.
It did.
I have
but
links to my blog.
It's okay.
To my YouTube channel, to my LinkedIn, to my Facebook, to my Twitter. I welcome people to connect with me in all those ways. My Facebook is Michelle Tillis Letterman, again, my full name, comma, author and speaker. I do ask people to connect with me on my professional page, not my personal page. There's one of my boundaries. On Twitter, I'm M.T. Letterman, and again, I spell it L-E-D-E-R-M-A-N. Not like David Letterman, but we sound the same. The book you can get on Amazon. You can get it in the bookstores. I'm in 8 languages.
Nice.
Yeah, if you're interested in the book as a course, we are going to be doing an online version because I know your audience is not geographically in one place. We're doing it live in New Jersey through Rutgers, but we will be doing an online course in 2015. If you add your name to my newsletter, I don't send one more than once a month because I just don't have the time.
Nice.
You will get announced when those courses will be launched, or you can just go to the 11lawsoflikeability.com.
Excellent.
So lots and lots of ways to stay in touch.
Yeah, absolutely. Michelle, thank you so much for being with me here today. I have thoroughly enjoyed your company, and it has been an honor and a privilege to have you on the show.
I've enjoyed it, too. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, well, I can't wait to get you back. Well, listen, everybody.
Email me.
Show...
We'll get... Something in the middle towards the end of first quarter, I think we can probably do it.
I think that would be great. That's about when I'm scheduling guests right now anyway, so that will be perfect. And I will definitely go get – I think I'm already on your mailing list, but I will go check. I have a junk email address that I use for email letters and email newsletters. And about once a month I go in and I read everything I want to read, and then I don't go back until the next month because – they're time-consuming, but I will definitely check
totally
and make
get
sure
it.
That you're in there. Yeah, I know you do. Well, listen, everybody, thank you for being with us here today, and the show will be available for download in about an hour. And this is Denise Griffiths and Michelle Letterman. Just type in our names. You'll find us in iTunes. And, Michelle, thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on your Partner in Success Radio.